Chapter 6 of 2 Kings continues with the life of Elisha. And in the first portion of chapter 6, we read about the miracle of the floating axe head. Following this unusual miracle by Elisha, which again demonstrated to all those around that God was sovereign in the physical universe, the king of Syria begins once again to wage war against Israel. The king, as commander-in-chief of his armed forces, details the battle plan against Israel to his various generals and the commanders, and he commands them to set up camps and lay siege to the city in certain places. Elisha sends word to the king of Israel, Jehoram, regarding each strategic location which the Syrian king has determined to wage war against the Israelites. The king of Israel sends down and says, "Don't go here, and don't go there, and don't go here." Verse 10 says that he guarded himself there not once or twice, which means many times. The king of Syria is absolutely enraged. He said, "There's a leak somewhere. There's a spy. There's a counter-spy here." And he begins to determine who it is in his own court or in his military hierarchy who is sending the information regarding his battle plans down to the Israelites. One of his servants told him in verse 12, he said, "You don't have a leak, O king of Syria. Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel," and that was Jehoram, "the words that you speak in the privacy of your bedroom." The king of Syria said, "You go get this man. I want to see him." What ensued was the invasion of huge portions of the Syrian army against the city of Samaria. Elisha miraculously delivered the city from the hands of the Syrians. The balance of chapter 6, beginning in verse 24, gives the account of an additional siege by the Syrians under King Ben-Hadad. We are allowed to see firsthand the experiences of the people inside the city of Samaria in their attempts to wait out the invading army outside the wall. Evidently, they weren't prepared for a long siege because at this time, verse 25 says that they are eating donkeys' heads and doves' dung. Things are pretty rough in there. And finally, as the king of Israel, Jehoram, is passing by on the wall, a woman cries out for help. And he says, "Where shall I help you? Can I help you from the threshing floor?" In other words, there's no grain around here. "Can I help you from the wine press? There's no wine around here. We're eating scraps and we're eating our own sandals." The woman answers and says, "Yesterday we ate my son. And we were supposed to eat this other woman's son today, but she has hidden him and we don't know where he is." The king is absolutely beside himself. He rips his clothes, and he blames this hardship on Elisha. I suppose, from his perspective, that's logical, because in the previous invasion in this chapter, it was Elisha who allowed all of the Syrians to return to their land unharmed after he had caused the Syrians to be captured by the armies of Israel. He sends for Elisha. Elisha is down in his house, and he says, "See how this son of a murderer has sent to take my head?" In other words, this Jehoram, the son of that murderer Ahab, now wants to execute me. Beginning in chapter 7, verse 1, Elisha gives the promised deliverance and says that the very next day there will be an abundance of flour, such an abundance that it will be sold for only a shekel. 2 measures of barley will be sold for 1 shekel. Compared to chapter 6, verse 25, when they were selling donkeys' heads and doves' dung for exorbitant amounts, we see that prices have just fallen and bottomed out under Elisha's prophecy because of the abundance. It is simple supply and demand. When the royal officer of the court, the king of Israel's right-hand man, heard it, he scoffed at Elisha. Elisha's response is, you will see it, but you will not benefit from it. The balance of the chapter tells how the Lord caused the army of the Syrians to hear a sound of chariots and a sound of horses, so that they believed that the king of Israel was coming out against him with hired mercenaries from the Hittites and the Egyptians. And as a result, they panicked and fled, and in their haste left behind all of their provisions. When the people in the city heard of it, they stormed through the gates to loot the deserted camp of the Syrians. And in their haste, there was a stampede at the gate, and the royal officer that rebuked Elisha for his prophecy is trampled and crushed under the feet of the mob as they attempt to get out of the city to take the spoil which has been left by the Syrians. We will now leave the study of the northern kingdom of Israel and begin a brief study of the southern kingdom of Judah. 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 16 says, in the fifth year of Joram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat being then the king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, became king. And again, we have this overlap and co-regency between Joram, or Jehoram in the south, and his father Jehoshaphat. When Jehoram secured the throne in the south, he did a heinous thing in the sight of God. To find what this is, it is necessary to go to 2 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 4. Now when Jehoram was risen up to the kingdom of his father, that is Jehoshaphat, he strengthened himself and slew all his brethren with the sword, and divers also of the princes of Israel. In the seed line of David, in the southern kingdom of Judah, in the messianic line, we discover there is an ungodly king, the son of the good king Jehoshaphat, who, to secure his position on the throne, kills all of his brothers, and others also, some of the other princes. He has murdered and assassinated the other children of Jehoshaphat. Well, of course, we discovered before that this was a common practice in that time period, and it was a common practice on down through the 17th and 18th centuries A.D. In fact, this kind of practice is the basis of some of Shakespeare's plays, which centered around the royal house of England. Not only does he do this heinous crime, but verse 18 in 2 Kings chapter 8 says that he walked in the way of the king of Israel. Now, Baalism has been brought down into the southern kingdom of Judah. Just as the house of Ahab had done, verse 18 says, and we want to ask, why did he do this? Why did Jehoram import the religion of Baalism from the northern kingdom? Verse 18 gives us our answer. For the daughter of Ahab became his wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. This is Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. She is now the queen on the throne in the kingdom of Judah in the south. Imagine. Think with me for a moment about our continuing saga of Satan's attempt to make certain that the promise made in Genesis 3:15 does not come to pass. Satan is subtle and Satan is patient. How can Satan get into the southern kingdom with a personage so powerful that this personage can actually make certain that the seed line of David does not continue? This is the way he has chosen to do it. By beginning two generations earlier with Omri, the king of Israel, and motivating Omri to bring in the daughter of Ethbaal, named Jezebel, to marry his son Ahab, Satan began his patient plot to get Athaliah into the southern kingdom. Then, Ahab and Jezebel had several offspring, among which was Athaliah. Now, unfortunately, Jehoshaphat, we read previously, brought Athaliah into the southern kingdom to marry his son Jehoram, so that a political alliance could be made between the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. Now Athaliah has been patiently waiting, while her husband Jehoram has been co-regent with his father Jehoshaphat. Immediately after the death of Jehoshaphat, I'm sure that Athaliah, like the wicked queen in Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, said to her husband Jehoram, "If you don't do something quickly, your brothers will take the throne from you." And Jehoram exterminated all of his brothers and others in the kingdom who might be a threat, or others in the kingdom who may have resisted having this evil woman Athaliah as queen on the throne in the Messianic kingdom, the line of Judah. Unfortunately, they exterminated those who would resist before any resistance could be made. Athaliah has now cemented her position as queen of Judah, and her husband Jehoram, the seed of David, is firmly implanted as king of Judah. We noticed earlier in our study of 2 Kings from chapter 2 through chapter 8, verse 15, that the consideration was given to the life of Elisha following the ascension of Elijah to heaven by a whirlwind. There is an overlap between the early days or months of the reign of Jehoram in Judah and the extension of the ministry of Elijah in the north. 2 Chronicles chapter 22, beginning in verse 12, indicates that prior to Elijah's ascension by a whirlwind and the initiation of the ministry of Elisha in the north, God used him to rebuke Jehoram, the king of Judah in the south. Verse 12 begins, "And there came a writing to him from Elijah the prophet, saying, Thus saith the Lord God of David thy father, because thou hast not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat thy father, nor in the ways of Asa king of Judah, his grandfather, but hast walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and hast made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to go a-whoring, like the whoredoms of the house of Ahab, and also hast slain thy brethren of thy father's house, which were better than thyself. Behold, with a great plague will the Lord smite thy people, and thy children, and thy wives, and all thy goods, and thou shalt have great sickness by disease of thy bowels, until thy bowels fall out by reason of the sickness day by day." Now again, extended into the life of Jehoram in the southern kingdom, we see the continuance of the promised chastisement made to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7 in the Davidic covenant. 2 Chronicles 21 verse 19 continues, "And it came to pass that in the process of time, after the end of 2 years, his bowels fell out by reason of his sickness. So he died of sore diseases, and his people made no burning for him, like the burning of his fathers." In other words, they did not mourn his death. He was an evil man. 32 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years, and departed without being desired. Howbeit, they buried him in the city of David, but not in the sepulchres of the kings. Chapter 22, verse 1 says, "So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned." Continuing in verses 2 and 3, 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. Now here's the important background information that we had discussed previously. Continuing in verse 2, chapter 22, 2 Chronicles, "His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri," or the granddaughter, as we know the case to be. "He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly." Wherefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. He walked also after their counsel, and went with Jehoram the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians smote Joram, and he returned to be healed in Jezreel, because of the wounds which were given him at Ramah. Let us set the scene for what is taking place. The two kingdoms, Israel and Judah, now have relatives on the throne. Jehoram, the son of Ahab, is reigning as king in the northern kingdom. His sister, Athaliah, is the queen mother in the kingdom of Judah in the south, and his nephew, Ahaziah, the daughter of Athaliah, is the king of Judah in the south. As we just read, these two, uncle and nephew, joined together, they united their kingdoms and went out to do battle against a common enemy. The king of the north, Jehoram, was injured during the battle and returned to Jezreel to recuperate and be healed from his wounds. The situation now has deteriorated to the place where both the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah are intensely involved in Baal worship. We find that the Baal counselors are giving counsel both to Jehoram in the north and Ahaziah in the south. When this comes to pass, God again steps into the program. He now instructs Elisha to carry out the earlier instruction given to Elijah on Mount Horeb. Recall that after Elijah fled from Jezebel and went 40 days and 40 nights in the strength of the food given to him by the angel, he was given two commandments while he stood before the Lord on Mount Horeb. Those two commandments were to anoint Elisha to be his successor, and that was done. The second commandment was to anoint Jehu. Elijah did not accomplish this, but the task was reserved for Elisha. Returning to the narrative in 2 Kings chapter 9, we are introduced to chapter 9 following the last two verses in chapter 8. Which review what we examined historically in the book of 2 Chronicles, namely that the two kings went out to war against the king of Syria, and Joram returned to be healed at Jezreel. However, now we discover that Ahaziah, the king of Judah, the son of Athaliah, decides to visit his uncle in the north in Jezreel, and comfort him during his recovery from the injuries he suffered during the battle. With the king of the north, Jehoram, lying ill in Jezreel, and Ahaziah, the king of the south, journeying up to see him in Jezreel, the narrative breaks off and begins with a side event recorded in chapter 9. In fulfillment of the instruction given to Elijah and then passed on to Elisha, Elisha instructs one of the sons of the prophets to go up to Ramoth-Gilead and find Jehu and go in and say, "Jehu, come out. I have a word from the Lord for you. And when you find him, you anoint him king over Israel and then run like the wind. Don't wait around to see what happens." Verse 4 says that the young man went up to Ramoth-Gilead. As he approached, the captain, Jehu, and all of his men were sitting around and probably discussing battle plans and so on and so forth. And he came in and he said, "I have a word for you, O captain." And Jehu said, "Which one of us?" He didn't know who the prophet was talking about. And he said, "For you." He arose, went into the house, and when he went into the house, this young prophet breaks the horn of oil on his head and says, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I have anointed you king over the people of the Lord, even over Israel. And since you are now king, your job is to strike the house of Ahab, so I can avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of the Lord, in other words, those who perished at the hand of Jezebel, because the whole house of Ahab will perish, and I'm going to cut off from Ahab every male person, and I'm going to make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, in other words, extinguished, and like the house of Baasha, in other words, extinguished. And finally, the dogs are going to eat Jezebel in the territory of Jezreel, and no one's going to bury her, and we'll discover why in a few minutes. When he said that, he opened the door and fled, just like Elisha told him to do. Jehu came out of the house to the other men around there, and they said, "Is everything okay? This man looked like he was crazy." And he said, "You know what the man said. You probably overheard it." And they said, "It is a lie. We didn't hear anything. Tell us what happened." And he said, "This is what he said to me. I have anointed you king over Israel." The men didn't laugh anymore. They took off their clothes. They threw their clothes, their garments under him on the bare steps coming down from the porch on the house. They grabbed the trumpet. They blew the trumpet and shouted, "Jehu is king, and he's going to be God's man for this task in the north." No wonder these men are pleased, because they have had a good relationship with this man. They have served him well, and now he is king, and their positions in the kingdom have automatically been elevated. Of course, there's one problem. There's already a king in the north. What we have here is tantamount to treason. What we have here is a coup d'etat, a military coup. But it is a God-ordained military coup, because the man who is sitting on the throne in the north is not a God-ordained king. To bring about the necessary change in the land and to fulfill the prophecy made on the house of Ahab, time has come for God to select a man to carry out the task, to fulfill the prophecy made by Elijah in Naboth's vineyard. Jehu rounds up his forces and begins to ride madly in his chariots toward Jezreel. We know what's taking place in Jezreel, because the king of the north is recuperating and his nephew, the king of the south, is visiting him there. Verse 16 says, "Jehu rode in his chariot and he came to Jezreel, because Joram was lying there and Ahaziah, king of Judah, had come down to see him." Verse 17 says that a watchman is standing on the tower in Jezreel. His job is to watch the flat valley plain to see if anyone is approaching. And as he looks out toward the horizon, he sees a company of men. And he said, "I see a company." And Joram, the king of Israel, said, "Take a horseman and send him out to meet him, this company of men, to find out if it's a peaceful approach so that we can close the gates and everything, if it's going to be a sudden military attack." The horseman came out and said to Jehu and his men, "Is it peace?" And Jehu, in so many words, said, "I don't have anything to do with you. If you want to save your neck, you better get in behind me." When the horseman didn't return, the watchman didn't know quite what to do, and he sends a second horseman out, verse 19 said, and Jehu said the same thing to him. The watchman finally reports, "Neither one of these horsemen returned, and this man is driving furiously. It's like the driving of Jehu." Joram said, "Get ready," and they made his chariot ready. There's no reason at this point in time why Jehoram, the king of Israel, should assume anything is wrong, because Jehu is one of his captains. Jehoram, the king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, both went out, each in his chariot, verse 21 says. And they went out to meet Jehu, and Jehu was waiting around the property of Naboth. When they came up and approached Jehu, they said to him, "Is it peace, Jehu?" And Jehu said, "What peace? So long as the harlotries of your mother Jezebel and her witchcrafts are so many." And he, in so many words, gives Jehoram the death sentence. When Jehoram heard these words, he knew that there was rebellion. And he turns around and screams to his nephew, "There's treachery, Ahaziah." And the two kings now are in a state of panic. And as Joram begins to flee, Jehu pulled his bow back and shot an arrow, and it went completely through King Jehoram's back, right through his heart, and he sank in his chariot. Jehu turns to his officer and says, take him and throw him in the field of Naboth the Jezreelite. He turns around and sees Ahaziah, the king of the south, and Ahaziah begins to flee by the garden house in the vineyard, and Jehu said, let's just get him too and clean up this whole wicked family. He pursues King Ahaziah, and they shot him, and he died there. And the servants carried him in the chariot back down south to Jerusalem and buried him in the grave of the kings in the city of David. Jehu now turns from Naboth's vineyard and begins heading back toward the city of Jezreel. And as Jehu returns to Jezreel, Jezebel has heard what has happened. Remember her position. She is the mother of the king of the north who has just been killed, and she is the grandmother of the king of the south who has just been killed. When she sees Jehu riding in, she screams out the window to him, is it well, Zimri, your master's murderer? And this is a slur against Jehu, calling to mind the assassination of Elah by Zimri some years before. Jehu looks up into the window where Jezebel is and screams out, who is on my side? And there are several officials or eunuchs around there, and they look down at him, and they know that if they do not side with Jehu, then surely their lives are all on the line. And he says, throw her down. They picked up the aged Jezebel, who had painted her eyes and adorned her head before she looked out of the window, and threw her down onto the street below. When she hit the street below, they ran over her with the chariots. And as they ran over her with the chariots, her blood is sprinkled on the wall and on the horses as they ran over her, as they trampled her underfoot. Jehu came into the city, and he sat down and ate and drank and said, oh, by the way, go out and take care of that cursed woman that we threw out of the window and bury her. After all, she is a king's daughter. She is the daughter of Ethbaal, the king of the Sidonians or Phoenicians. They went out to bury her just as a matter of courtesy, but could find nothing except the skull and her feet and the palms of her hands. The dogs had eaten all the rest of her remains. And they returned and told Jehu, and Jehu said, this is the word of the Lord which he spake by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, in the property of Jezreel, the dogs will eat the flesh of Jezebel. And the prophecy made by Elijah to Ahab in Naboth's vineyard has been fulfilled. I am reminded of Psalm 37, verse 35, I have seen the wicked in great power, and spreading himself like a green bay tree. Yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, but he could not be found. Verse 38, but the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The end of the wicked shall be cut off. This is the end of side 2.